Welcome to BDO To Go, casual industry conversation brought to you by the restaurant industry professionals at BDO. The constantly evolving landscape of the industry forces operators and owners to adapt quickly and maintain a keen awareness of consumer and economic shifts. Understanding these business impacts and insights is key to the continued success and resilience of the restaurant industry. That's why we crafted our new BDO To Go podcast series, a monthly podcast that you can take to go.
Welcome back to another episode of BDO To Go, our podcast dedicated to exploring industry trends and best practices. My name is Meg Potts, and I'm co-lead of BDO's National Restaurant Industry Group and your host today. We're excited to be joined by Jerry Dalton. Jerry has an extensive background in financial commodity price risk hedging and supply purchasing. Since 1998, he has successfully executed these strategies for various companies and has managed physical supply purchasing for agriculture and energy. Since 2011, Jerry has partnered with and coached many multi-sized food service companies and food manufacturers in commodity intelligence and price forecasting. He teaches supply purchasing disciplines and uses financial price risk tools to preserve margins. Jerry, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Meg. I appreciate it. I look forward to our conversation.
Well, it's certainly an interesting environment right now with all of the new tariffs, and I don't know if we could have timed our conversation any better. As you know, restaurants have been balancing commodity and wage pressures, and this definitely adds a whole new level of economic uncertainty.
You know, one interesting before, and the tariffs obviously are front and center, and I'll talk about that a little bit here, but I kind of almost wanted to, before even saying that, because you have, you know, some of the comments here, you know, wage pressures and commodity inflation. So commodity inflation, even since 2020, you know, into current has remained very high and elevated even before the tariffs came on. So it's definitely a challenging environment right now.
Yeah. And then on top of that, you know, dial back a couple of weeks ago, the National Restaurant Association estimated that the initial 25% tariff on goods from Canada and Mexico could cost the restaurant industry $12 billion, which basically equates to about a 30% profit loss for independent restaurant operators. And Canada and Mexico are on top of that list with the items that are being most discussed. What impact do you think that that's going to have on both American companies and consumers?
Yeah, it's a great question. You are right for highlighting, obviously, our neighbors, Canada and Mexico. But just to be clear, let's not take for granted, you know, everybody understands exactly what a tariff is, because even I had to pause and say, okay, exactly how does this work? First of all, in the United States, we are a major importer of commodities. We, over the last 60, 70 years, we became more of a service-oriented economy, and manufacturing has kind of waned, and, you know, we've just been dependent. And, you know, just to be clear, the way a tariff works with all the countries we buy from, it's not the audience may already notice, but I think it's important. It's not a tax to that actual exporter from that country, right? So being taxed by the United States, it's the buyer here in the United States that buys that product and, you know, processes it, makes it into a finished item. Obviously, that goes flows down, as you mentioned, to the consumer. So it's basically an added tax, right? So definitely, and the other thing that makes, you know, conversations, and I listen to a lot of analysts that I find great value in, and everybody's all over the board and trying to figure this out. You know, bottom line is not every commodity is the same, meaning being sourced from, where it's coming from. Some we export out, for grains, for example. But it's definitely a really volatile time. Now, the other thing too is it's not, you know, keep in mind, we the U.S. currency is still a fiat currency, and it's not just tariffs. It's also, which has always been the case, the current, our currency value, right? The U.S. dollar, as you know, right, Meg? So, and it's, you know, so both of those things are key to watch. We always watch the dollar. I'm a big advocate. I learned in 07, 08, the hard way, you know, in my years on the trading desk, that dollar currency can really make a difference, especially when it weakens, right? Because it exports out, less imports in. So, yeah, so the tariffs have definitely added volatility, and I think they're going to definitely play out here in the next couple of weeks. And, you know, a lot of times when you get shocks to the system like that, they, you know, I just, in my years in doing this, is that they aren't usually as bad as they initially may hear, you know, on the news. But again, Canada, Mexico are two major partners there. So with that, I'll pause and I can go through some items if you'd like to.
I mean, that would be great. Obviously, when you start to think about those avocados, coffee, those are some items that are brought up right away, along with beef and poultry. But I find that sometimes people forget about some of the, all of the other items that we're getting. I mean, the amount of aluminum that we receive from Canada, driving the cost of our canned goods, is an area that doesn't get as much attention. But it'd be interesting to hear a few of those key items that you have noted.
Yeah, some key ones I got written down here. You mentioned avocados. Well, fruits and vegetables as a whole from Mexico are pretty big. Avocados are a growing item in the United States, especially with the Mexican concepts, right, in our restaurants out there and growing beyond. So nuts, sugar, you know, coffee, you know, those basically come from Brazil. A Brazil tariff, by the way, is, you know, you look at the different tariffs last week, the different percentages. Good thing is Brazil didn't seem like a very big tariff to the U.S., so maybe that won't be that bad with those items. Cocoa, you mentioned beef, but you know one I really want to highlight I have in my notes here is that seafood. You know, seafood, 70 to 85% of the U.S. seafood is imported. And it's interesting, right? So, and that's always been the case. And our big countries we buy from are Canada, China, India, Indonesia, and Vietnam. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. I haven't heard a lot of talk there, but definitely, I definitely got my radar watching that. Other area, you know, wine, even though we have a lot of wine in California, we still import a lot of wine. Interesting. And you mentioned aluminum. I got to bring in a personal story here because it's pretty funny. I live in Southwest Florida, and we were considering, I have a black Labrador, getting a fence for a back yard. This was about two years ago. And the company came out and he explained to me, he goes, oh, we have to import our aluminum. And it was expensive. I'm like, I'm bypassing. So that's the first. So I didn't think much of it, right? And then we had Hurricane Milton. You know, we had a very active hurricane season. And unfortunately, my neighbor's tree crushed our pool cage here, literally crushed it. And so good news is we got, you know, insurance to reimburse us, and we're waiting on a new pool reconstruction. But I was joking with my wife. I said, we better lock in that contract, you know, which we did, and we had to do it. So right. Well, you're right. Aluminum's a big one. It's definitely a big one.
Yeah, you need to hurry up and get that fence built as soon as possible right now.
Yeah, no, I locked it in, so I'm good to go, which is good.
That's great. And all of this comes on top of, obviously, the uncertainty and the commodity pressure that our restaurants have already been feeling, just like you touched on at the beginning. And when we think about the last few months, restaurants have been benefiting a little from that fluctuation in the consumer price index, the CPI, where your food away from home has been rising at a lower rate than the food at home, which normally encourages our guests to go out and visit restaurants a little bit more because it's no longer cheaper to eat at home. But with all of this new impact coming from tariffs, do you see that changing, that dynamic right now between the food at home versus food away from home?
Well, I think it's going to impact both, bottom line. You know, it'll, you know, the food away from home, your major supermarkets and those retail units will obviously have upside pressures as well. You know, the good thing is, and I know our audience knows this, is that, you know, the younger generation, restaurants have become such a key part of feeding America, right? And that's not going to change. So I don't think there's going to be one runaway to the other. You know, meaning I think they're both going to experience the gains. Now, both, by the way, both CPI for both of them, food away from home, food at home, you know, got moved up pretty good along with the inflation since 2020 as well. But to your point, though, it's really hasn't impacted, you know, restaurants, which is a good thing.
Yeah. And when you think about that inflation aspect, I know when we were talking a couple months ago about some other topics, we discussed the inflation and stagflation at the same time. And now we're seeing that, or I'm hearing it more and more in the news. I thought it might be a great moment to take and kind of define those for everyone about the impact that could have.
Yeah, it's a great question. And, you know, I got to admit, I've been doing this a long time. I never knew the term stagflation up to about 10 years ago, right? So, you know, the normal inflation cycle is, and it's, you know, you learn that when you have an economy or that has sound dollar, sound currency, good job growth, good employment, you know, and low commodity prices, and is growing. You just naturally grow, right? And like any thing that's effective, obviously commodity prices eventually go higher on a good economy. And then, you know, you usually see inflation hit one or two sectors, or it could come up being broad, but bottom line, it's just part of the cyclical cycle of business, right? And then interest rates get raised, the Fed raises interest rates to slow it down, and then that's the case, right? Now, you know, unfortunately though, the U.S. over the last many years, in the currency, I'll go back to that currency, U.S. dollar, we've printed a lot of money. I mean, let's call it what it is. And there's a lot of money in the system, a lot of liquidity, and that's more dollars chasing a finite amount of commodities. So the reason why I bring that up, that has been the main catalyst to what the term stagflation is. And if I wrote it down right here, stagflation is a combination of high inflation and slow economic growth. So often accompanied by high unemployment, causes supply side shocks, restricted trade policies such as tariffs, and poor government or Fed decisions. So, you know, bottom line is that's working. That's what it is. But I just want to, that's why people are a little bit more concerned. You don't want, because usually when you have normal cyclical, you know, inflation, the prices come off and then it resets, you benefit from those lower new commodity prices. Unfortunately, with stagflation, the fear is that even though some of those, you know, prices may not come off as what they typically do. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So it kind of lingers a little bit longer instead of getting that relief that we're all hoping for.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. But concerning, and I know we talked a little bit before there, our conversation here is that, we, you know, the good news is even since last week, we are seeing energy prices coming down pretty hard, which is good.
Well, that's great. I mean, we need a silver lining right now with some of the other uncertainty and pressure that they're feeling. So do you want to go expand on that?
Yeah. No, I always, all the years of being in the commodity markets, I kind of look at it as in sectors, and I always like to prioritize, right? If you think about the economy, the two, you know, they're all important, but I consider the most important commodity sectors are energy and the grains. First, energy, right? Energy is everywhere. Manufacturing, diesel fuel, shipping, right? It just, you know, some of the feedstocks come from, you know, the energy for plastics and resins. So it's a big player. And in fact, it's in areas you may not always associate with, such as, you know, packaging. But, and then grains, you got to remember, grains are so critical because they not only feed people, they feed the livestock, right? Which is your beef, pork, and chickens, and which is huge, right? So feed costs will always play a big role. And I guess with the silver lining there is that those two sectors have been the least inflationary in the last year and a half. It's mostly been really the meat proteins, you know, beef still historically high, chicken. So it's definitely those sectors have been, again, inflated. But the grains, if you remember back in 2012, right around the Ukraine deal in Russia, that you had wheat and corn go, we're almost cut in half on grain prices from that. I mean, so that was just a couple of years back, right? And then you have, and again, as I mentioned, in fact, before our call today, I was looking at crude oil, and let me read these to you, the prices of grain right here. So currently, right before our call, the crude oil spot market is down 22.1% year over year, the lowest since April of 21. Diesel fuels down 18.6% year over year, low since these 21, and gasoline prices are down 26.3%. Now, this is wholesale, keep in mind, not retail. You see at the pump. Right. There's a delay there, keep in mind. But prices are moving notably lower, which is great. But I gotta be fair, though. Natural gas prices are up. Natural gas is a big energy commodity as well, you know, but it went from $1.76 to $3.50. So still relatively not expensive. So again, I'm happy with those two sectors.
That's great. And it provides a little bit of an offset to some of the other pressures that we were talking about. And when we think about handling this level of uncertainty, not only the new tariff aspect, but also just the overall commodity pressure, let's talk a little bit about some solutions and strategies that can help in situations like this. I mean, we think about, obviously, planning on the financial side. So is there any strategies that you see companies adopt to manage some of these increases and pressures?
Yeah, well, you know, historically, we didn't, and let's be honest, a lot of companies, especially emerging companies, will, you don't really think too much, because we really invented up until 4 years ago, 5 years ago, commodity prices were relatively down for a while, you know? So, and if they were expensive or inflationary, it was like one sector, like beef, right? Not the whole broad concept. So I guess what I'm getting at is it's become, I believe, much more critical that you start looking when you budget and plan for next year. Most companies start that process in July, you know, August for next year. I think it's important now to say, hey, listen, let's get some forecasts. Let's get some, even if you need some help, to just kind of look at expectations of those prices, because it's definitely something that you can't just ignore, you know, because, you know, keep in mind, I know a lot of people are listening to this, but it's a competitive world, right? You want to do your best. Everyone's looking at margins and you know, always trying to improve and do those. I just think it's become more of a necessity. And I'm seeing that with a lot of companies I talk to that are paying more attention to that. So I mean, one, let me just suggest one, you know, it's funny, companies grow, right? And you, I think what happens is they have cash reserves and they decide at what rate should we grow? Should we open more units, more stores? I think it's important now to start taking some of that cash balance and start pre-thinking or pre-setting that money for future commodity, you know, food purchases, almost like a upfront, you know, say you have a expectation of 5% year over year, or you start, you know, putting in a till and getting interest on some money. I think that's a good way to start reserving cash for those pending or uncertain price moves that can come. And the good thing about that, when you do that, and prices, say they go lower, right? You have a sell-off in the marketplace. You kind of have that as a reserve. You start thinking, hey, let's have a reserve to plan. I think that can make sense.
Yeah, that would really help. I mean, obviously, some of these pressures are naturally cyclical and seasonal in nature. So taking that into account, but then also taking a little bit more to take more of that conservative approach and making sure that you're reserving some for any additional uncertainty that could come up.
Yes. Yeah. And I, to be honest with you, I think that's a good macro plan. Like I said, even if prices go lower, I think you stick to it. And every year you build and build, you know, because eventually markets will have inflation come back.
Right. The other key strategy that you hear a lot of people talk about, especially right now, is supplier management and making sure that you have a diverse supply chain. That's sometimes easier said than done, right?
Yes. And keep in mind, and you know, it's funny, I work with QSRs, restaurants, but also many food manufacturers as well. And I like to call it a win-win, because I think, you know, price risk management begins with purchasing, literally. It's not, you don't have to have some real complex tools. And I think that the more that restaurants, or what we call end users, the buyers, communicate with their sellers or suppliers, the better that is. So, you know, I've always preached over the years that, you know, and let me start by saying this too, though. I understand that your spec is always important, especially with restaurants. What makes your quality, right? You never should sacrifice that. But that being said, it always makes sense, I believe, from a price risk relief perspective, is to expand your supplier base. And if they can meet your spec, right? Because, you know, look back at COVID happened with the shutdown. You know, things can happen out of nowhere. And the more suppliers you can purchase from, it just helps you. And you keep in mind, and suppliers and manufacturers know this as well, that they have to buy those raw commodities to make their item, you know, process it. They got price risk too, so they don't necessarily own the product at the same price, right? So it makes it, and to the manufacturers who are listening, you know, the other side is, it's great to, they want new customers, right? You want to build your customer base. So, you know, offering some pricing, and we talk about this too, is, you know, other ways to buy the item if you're selling to that customer on a fixed price contract, which are very popular. They will always be, you know, hey, what's my price for the next 3 months, 6 months? But, you know, you could also get some lagging index formula. You know, if you're buying your pork bellies, your bacon, you know, you use a 30-day USDA average price for your next 30 days. You see that pricing as well. So I think the more the restaurants communicate with the suppliers, you start to learn that it's not just about, hey, I need my product and that's it. It's the bigger relationships grow on both sides of the spectrum, everybody wins in the end, I believe.
Right. At the end of the day, it kind of comes down to making sure that you have strong relationships and open communication, because it needs to be successful on both sides of the coin.
That's right. Literally. And I always told, I always told restaurants I was helping, you got to remember, manufacturers need to make money. You got to formula, you know, they shouldn't be afraid to say, here's my margin, you know, on the formula. And it's a good thing, you know, transparency and communication.
Yeah, I agree. Well, Jerry, thank you for sharing your valuable insights and expertise with us today. Obviously, navigating the complexity of inflation, commodity prices, supply chain, tariffs is increasingly challenging. And your guidance on the various strategies and planning has been really timely and very helpful.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the conversation and the opportunity to talk to your audience. Thanks.
Thank you. And to all of our listeners, we hope this discussion has provided you with practical tools and perspectives to better manage your business in these uncertain times. Remember, staying informed and adaptable is key to thriving in today's economic landscape. Thank you for tuning in, and we look forward to having you join us again. We encourage you to subscribe to our podcast. Have a great day and enjoy a meal at a restaurant.
Thank you for listening to BDO To Go. Past episodes and related insights are available at bdo.com/BDO To Go. Or you can go to iTunes or Spotify to rate, review, share, or subscribe to this podcast. The views expressed by our guests do not necessarily reflect the views of BDO. For more information on BDO's restaurant industry practice and the resources we provide, visit www.bdo.com/restaurants.